Welcome to Adult Siblings Versus, a podcast where a grown-ass brother and sister put aside their childhood rivalry in order to review nostalgic pieces of pop culture. I'm your co-host, Jason S. Leverett.
And I'm your other co-host, Arielle Leverett.
Well, Arielle, everything is bad, nothing is sacred, and we're all going to die.
Woo! Woo!
Yeah, nostalgia is nothing more than member berries and rose-tinted glasses of the past, because everything you think is funny from when you were a child is actually stupid and bad.
Holy shit.
We should have learned this lesson after we watched Hook, and we did not.
But this is so much worse. This is such a worse scenario of that. What a bummer.
Okay, so I'm gonna have an alternative intro, because that might be a little dark. Here's the alternative intro. So last week we did an X-Men episode, right?
Yeah.
So that did more views in 24 hours than the episode before that did in a week.
Cool.
So the lesson here is that all our podcasts should be about X-Men. So today we're going to do a little-known X-Men film about a group of young mutants who run around trying to, you know, their mutant power is that they're really sexist and talk like they're 42. And it's called Little Rascals X. Maybe I'll use both those intros.
Honestly, yeah, yeah. Their mutant power, precociousness.
We are doing the 1994 film Little Rascals, which, you know, if you Google search Little Rascals, it mostly comes up to this movie, which I thought was very weird, but I found out why, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But we'll get into it, but man, right now, I'm just going to say, woof. So we're going to discuss this movie about a bunch of little kids doing stuff, even though we're in our 30s, and I already have to deal with my own little kid. So I don't know why am I watching a fictional version of that. It's like being stressed out at your job and then watching Office Space. If you'd like to get a hold of us, as always, you can reach us through email via adultsiblingsversus@gmail.com, and you can reach us through Twitter @adultversus. And also, you can find us on Facebook. Just search for Adult Siblings Versus. Okay, so, Ariel, I know that, me being a little older than you, my memories of this film might be a little different from yours, but what did you recall of The Little Rascals prior to rewatching it?
I recall being perfectly into this movie. I feel like I liked it fine. Like, I think I enjoyed it as a youth. I remember I used to sing the, I got a dollar, I got a dollar, I got a dollar, hey, 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 quite a bit. Or the variation of that
pickle. We all did. Although, that was a family event, family affair. We all were jumping around saying, I got a pickle, I got a pickle.
Which is ridiculous, considering that as a youth, I never ate pickles. But I love a song. Yeah, I just remember liking this. And now I'm like, ugh, your taste, baby girl.
Well, okay, hold on. Getting ahead of yourself.
Okay. I was just saying, at the time, when it came out in 1994, as a 6-year-old, I was like, yeah.
Thumbs up.
Yeah, it was a childhood thumbs up.
Yes, this is a audio medium.
Well, they heard the yeah.
Yeah, okay. I remember this movie being pretty good. I remember it being clever. I remember it being fun. We'll talk about it. I also remember we got a dollar bit, which I liked at the time. We'll talk about it. All right. Interestingly, there's not a ton of information I've been able to find about the production of this film. The main thing about the production of this film I found is that apparently when filming this, and pre-production was going on and then filming it happened, supposedly the studio and the people doing this film were not very interested in having any input or really interacting too much with any of the original cast members from the original Little Rascals. Mm. How much of that is correct, and how much of that is a bunch of old folks being really annoyed about the new thing? Impossible to know. But that's kind of the thing. Like, a lot of the original cast members felt disrespected by the production of this film. So since I don't have a lot of info about the movie specifically, other than a couple of bits and pieces, we'll probably mostly talk about the franchise as a whole. And I'll try to go through it quickly. But the movie is a 1994 movie. It is based off of Hal Roach's Our Gang series of short films that were popular from like the 1920s to the 1940s. The film was directed by Penelope Spheris. I hope that's pronouncing it right. And that was a screenplay by Paul Guay, Stefan Mazur, and then also Spheris as well. Now, I do not know if you were aware of this, Ariel, but we are actually very familiar with this director, as she directed another film in our childhood. This is an even bigger episode for us than this, and that is the Beverly Hillbillies film.
You know what? There were moments of this that made me think we should watch the Beverly Hillbillies. So I guess there must have been sprinkling of that energy that I didn't connect. So that's very funny. Yeah, I could see it. I felt it. I felt the DNA of the Beverly Hillbillies in this.
It's like the Leah Thompson verse over here, because she's the villain in that film.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah.
She also directed Wayne's World, which is not, probably doesn't mean too much to us. We did not really watch that growing up, and I haven't really been super into it as an adult.
Yeah, I think I've only seen it once, and that was definitely as like, I don't know, like a 21, 22-year-old. Like, I saw it late in the game.
She's most famous for a series of documentaries called The Decline of Western Civilization.
Yeah, cool, cool, cool.
That's where she really made her bones in 1981, and then the sequel, The Decline of Western Civilization Part 2, The Metal Years, and then 1998, The Decline of Western Civilization Part 3.
That is
I've not seen either of these any of these documentaries.
Me neither. Absolutely not. This seems like a wide range of things that she does, so cool.
Yep. So, The Little Rascals. So, like I said, when you look up Little Rascals, this is the thing that comes up the most, which is a little weird, I thought, until... also, by the way, I could not find the budget for this film. So I have no idea how much it costs. I don't think it probably costs too much, unless Donald Trump's cameo fee is very high.
Ugh. We're good. It's
right. Oh, boy. But the gross was... $67.3 million. So unless this movie was weirdly expensive, they should have made a good deal of money off of this, but who knows. Anyway, so The Little Rascals, like I said, is a series of short films. Or is it? It's like, you notice that I said Our Gang, not Little Rascals, right? So yeah, the shorts were called Our Gang. That was actually the name of the first short. And let me just kind of point out a little something, because I don't know how old our listener base is. I know that we are way too young to have this as part of our general knowledge, but just so folks know, Our Gang they were serials back from even the days of silent film. And how film and theater used to work is that you would often have a bunch of serials attached to it, like short film. We call them short films now. Like, maybe they're like 20 minutes, half hour, maybe even shorter, with adventures featuring the same cast having a new adventure like every week or however long. They did this a lot with like science fiction and adventure stories. Batman had a serial. I'm trying to think, who is Buck Rogers, that's what I'm thinking of. I keep wanting to say Flash Gordon, but I actually want to say Buck Rogers. For things like the Batman and the Buck Rogers stuff, they would actually film basically a feature-length thing, and then they would just like cut it up, and then every episode would end on a cliffhanger, so you'd stay tuned for the next week. They used to have all this type of stuff, and then they would basically have the projector running all day, and they would play all these serials, maybe a feature-length film, the news, documentaries, They would just have it go all day. This would repeat. You wouldn't buy a ticket to see a show. You'd buy a ticket to go to the movies, and you'd just be in the movies for hours.
Nice.
This type of thing became completely irrelevant once television really got going. So that's why they stopped doing that. But, you know, that is kind of like the thing that they used to do. We are so far from that. Our movie going experience is much different these days. So, but, you know, just kind of, you know. Anyway, Our Gang was a series of shorts that was centered around a bunch of little kids, poor kids in American City. The big thing about this was supposedly that it featured kids in a non-fantasy setting talking, supposedly how kids would talk. You'd think kids would talk. The script wasn't written for them to, you know, talk like adults. Have no idea if that was successful, because I don't remember a single live action Little Rascals short. But the other important thing was that this was one of the first examples of media that had black characters treated as equals among a white cast during the Jim Crow era of racial segregation. So it's kind of funny, because if you look at some of this stuff, it looks racist as shit, especially since the black characters kind of talk in a way that is questionable. Mm. And there was at least one episode where kids got the measles and the black kid had white spots on his face.
You got to make it pop on camera, you know? You got to make it pop.
It was considered highly progressive at the time, and the actors who play these black kids would heavily defend the series and Hal Roach over the decades. So it's kind of like one of those situations, like, it seems bad to us now, but at the time, it was actually probably the most liberal thing at the movies, which is very depressing. But we should probably take that into consideration.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that. Because, like, considering the time, the idea that, like, kids are watching something where, like, they're seeing, like, so, like, say, like, white kids saying, these white kids hang out with black kids and them being friends and having that, like, start to be put in their DNA and not thinking about, like, I could see how, like, as far as, like, the 20s and 30s go, that's probably helpful.
Yeah. Man, this came out in the 20s. This is yet another thing that was around during the time frame of Downton Abbey. Which means that the cast of Downton Abbey couldn't be watching Little Rascals, much like they couldn't be reading Popeye.
That just, like, blows my mind. I just, it's like anything set in England, I just assume, like they couldn't possibly have been here. Like, it's like older England is like a different dimension. And they and they do not fit our timeline.
Anyway, the Our Gang shorts had several creative teams over the course of its life. Interestingly, made the transition from silent film to talkie, which is pretty cool. But, you know, like, Hal Roach was responsible for, like, I want to say 10 years, but maybe not quite 10 years. Maybe it'd been a little less. But other people have taken over. The ownership of it is kind of a little sketchy as well. But again, this is all called Our Gang. The reason that we now know it as the Little Rascals is because at some point, I believe in the 50s, someone got the rights to, like, the first, like, batch of stuff under Hal Roach and made the correct decision to syndicate them on television. Mm. And the television show was called The Little Rascals, which is the name that Hal Roach had originally wanted to call it, apparently, but it ended up being called Our Gang. But I would imagine that the syndicated version of The Little Rascals is the reason why we still talk about The Little Rascals at all, because basically we got a bunch of baby boomers who are growing up watching this on the Donna television, and then they are growing up and bringing that nostalgia with them into the 80s and the 90s, and now suddenly we've got ourselves a Little Rascals movie. Mm. Now, was that a good thing or a bad thing? Well, we'll soon see. So anyway, Ariel, it turns out that I accidentally somehow watched Tank Girl. I don't know how I watched Tank Girl, and I'm not sure why it took me until the third act to realize I was watching Tank Girl. But the fact is, I don't remember anything about this movie. I'm looking at the description. There's nothing about mutant kangaroos here at all, so I don't know what's going on. So can you please tell everybody what happens in this film.
Very interchangeable. That is totally fair. All right. Well, the story takes place somewhere southern. There are palm trees sometimes. It's weird.
Maybe it's southern.
Like, there are palm trees. But the thing is, I'll go into this. Because also, the only people who actually have southern accents are like the kids and no one else. It's confusing. But
it's
like,
not even all the kids. It's like two of them.
Yeah, it's weird. But even though, doesn't the Little Rascal city take place in a New York kind of situation? That's what our mom said. I was talking to her about.
I actually assume this might be in anywhere USA. Because this is probably all filmed on a soundstage in LA.
Yeah.
I mean, like, the original shorts. So, I don't know. I don't know if it takes place explicitly in New York. I think it takes place wherever your heart desires.
Okay. Well, in this scenario, it takes place somewhere with something. So, it starts out with Rascal leader Spanky gathering the children together for a He-Man woman haters meeting at their clubhouse. These kids are like the youngest effing kids ever having a full-on club meeting. It makes no sense. They're so orderly. There's no adults in sight, and they're like fucking four. They notice that they're kind of like, I don't know, second favorite person, Alfalfa, is nowhere around. And he's won the prestigious position of being their go-kart racer for the big go-kart race this year. And they're like, where is this dude? Meanwhile, it turns out he's on a date, even though with a girl, even though they...
Not with a dog? Which is the only acceptable date that the He-Man with the Hair Club would accept?
He was not out with Petey the dog. How dare he? Oh. He was hanging out with Darla, having a date, even though he's like 8 and she's like 5, and it's really fucking weird.
It's weird.
It's so weird. She's so young. Like, the difference between an 8-year-old and a 5-year-old, the idea that like an 8-year-old is like lusting after this girl in kindergarten sounds awful. But whatever. It's a lot of things.
I should point out, we don't actually know how old the actress is.
Yeah, we do. I looked it up. Oh, do we? Yeah. Oh, no.
Oh, no.
I 100% looked up the ages of these kids because it was driving me nuts. Yeah, she was definitely 5 at least.
No!
I mean, like 5 at the oldest because I don't know how long it took. Like, she...
I'm going to cut all this out.
Oh, sure. Yeah, she was born in 1989, and he was born in 1985.
Wow, so they're both 1 year younger than us.
Yeah.
Respectively.
That's gross. Like, imagine like being a kid in like third grade, fourth grade, and having like one of your classmates be like, "Oh man, your sister, so cute." Like, imagine that.
Oh my god. Good lord. Just 94? Oh, no. No. No.
Yeah. Yeah. Real creepy. Any hoops. So the boys in the He-Man Woman Haters Club are like, j'accuse! And they proceed to basically kind of sabotage Alfalfa's relationship with Darla. Meanwhile, there's a new kid on the block, a rich kid named Waldo. Who's also older, but some reason super into this 5-year-old. At least he thinks he's into her. I mean, he definitely hasn't like discovered his homosexuality yet, but he's on his way. Darla breaks up with Alfalfa and starts hanging out with the rich kid Waldo. And then the kids, their clubhouse burns down. They need to make money to build a new wall. Clubhouse, and then you got some outsider boys who are bullies, but it just seems like they're just the unpopular kids, and now I think they've just become aggressive because no one likes them. But, right. And then you got like the race to prepare for, so like that's kind of the stuff. It's just Alfalfa's trying to get back Darla, they're trying to make money for the clubhouse, and they got to get ready for this go-kart race. Those are the things of this movie. There you go.
So. Yeah. What did I like about this movie? I think that the basic premise of the story is fine.
Yeah.
I like some of the gags, or some of the gags I thought were, you know, if not laugh out loud funny, the concept was funny. Like the idea of them trying to get a loan from the bank and disguising themselves as Jewish men.
Yeah.
And then running into Jewish men dressed just like them as they're leaving the bank. Yeah, that's funny. There was one thing in this whole movie that particularly tickled me. And when they are trying to sell tickets to their sideshow, and they say, come see the 4-foot-tall man-eating chicken. And instead of having a 4-foot-tall chicken, it's just one of them who happens to be 4 foot with a mustache eating a bucket of chicken.
Yeah.
So it's like, come see the very short man eating chicken.
Yeah, that's cute.
Yep, I was really into that. Now, this movie is hindered to the point of being almost unwatchable by the broken level of bad acting in this. And you know why it's bad acting is because it is child acting, and too many members of the cast are just too young. The ages are way too spread out.
They're so young. You have like legitimate like 4-year-olds having scenes with just them. Like all the freaking buckwheat pinky shit, because those two are the youngest from what I can tell. Of like,
you mean Porky?
Oh God, yes. Sorry. Whoop. The buckwheat Porky stuff. Like that freaking kid, the kid who plays Porky, was born in 1990. So you have him doing these scenes with the kid playing buckwheat, and it's watching this movie was like watching someone else's kid's school play, and you've been like forced to watch this thing. And the kids are rubbish because they're like, oof. They're too young. They're too young. You can't have a kid be this young and not have like an adult with them to like do fun improv against whatever razzmatazz that kid is spewing. Like if they're just talking to each other, the amount of editing they had to do to make this like remotely understandable is just awful.
I don't even understand how this happened, because the older kids are fine for child acting.
Yeah.
Like the kid who plays Alfalfa, the kid who plays Waldo, those are the ones who I know for sure were older. They're perfectly serviceable. I actually think that the kid who plays Waldo is particularly good at delivering his lines.
Yeah.
He does it very clearly and crisply. But it is so... Like almost the entirety of the rest of the cast really just kind of feels like almost everyone feels like they're not acting. They feel like they're reciting lines that a adult taught them how to say 5 minutes ago.
Yeah. And there are so many scenes where it's just like, man, this is the one clean take you got, isn't it? This is like the one time you managed to get those words out of that kid's mouth, huh?
And this might not be as bad, except that considering that supposedly one of the big things about our gang was that they had dialogue that made the kids sound like kids as opposed to kids sounding like talking like adults, if that was the case, they threw that right out the window for this film, because this film is, they are saying things that no child that young has any business saying.
Yeah, having Buckwheat go, "You're on probation." What the? Why do you know that word, 5-year-old?
Darla taking a look at Waldo is like, "Wow, what a hunk."
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. It's so weird. What? Oh, man. It's a lot.
It's a lot. It's almost nothing else about this movie. It matters, because like I cannot get past the performances in this. It is almost to the detriment of, like, I feel bad for being so judgy about this. Because, like, there's a lot of work within this movie. A lot of people doing a lot of interesting things. And I only remember that Spanky can barely string a sentence together.
I mean, Spanky was doing... considering his age, he's doing pretty good.
Yeah, he's doing better than a lot of the other folks for sure.
Yeah, and he is one of the younger ones.
Yeah. Why were they so insistent on having such a young cast?
It's so weird. It's so unnecessary. Like, one, it's weird that kids this young even have a club like this. It's really strange. What 4 or 5-year-olds get together in such an organized manner by themselves? Like, what is this? It's so weird.
Yeah, they are an army. They are legion.
Yeah, it's really crazy. And that's why I kind of feel bad for our two supposed, you know, kind of bad boys, Butch and Woim, who are like the quote unquote bullies. But considering that, like, they seem to be like the only fucking kids in the town that aren't in this club, I think they're just dicks because they're not popular, and now they've just gotten like bitchy. Like,
and apparently it's not that hard to get into the club. Despite the fact that Alfalfa and Waldo have been at each other's throats for the whole film, he and Spanky were perfectly willing to let Waldo join the club when they thought that he was the one that helped them out at the end of the race. It was like all that stuff about stealing his girlfriend and taking his one true love or whatever, and possibly abandoning her because she's not in that car when he does that. All water under the bridge. It's okay, pal. You're a real He-Man woman hater after all. And so what did Butch and Woim do to warrant complete exile? Because, like, it'd be different if the gang was, like, the 5 main ones. Like, maybe Spanky, yeah. Alfalfa, Stymie, like, Froggy, and then, like, what? Like, I guess just throw Buckwheat and Porky in there. And if it was just them, then I could say, like, okay, there's some bullies who maybe pick on them. But then they've got about 632 other members, yeah. I believe, if I did the math right. So, no, it just feels like this is a club called No Homers. And Butch's name Homer.
It's really crazy. Like, yeah, they are not underdogs. And so, like, it's...
Hey, wait a second. Froggy's real name is Homer. I said, no, Homers. We can have one.
Yeah, it's weird. It really does seem like they're just like, well, yeah, let's just ignore these two dumb, unpopular kids.
And then, like, at the end of the film, Alfalfa beats up Butch.
Yeah, here's the thing. Because, like, they mention that apparently, like, they beat Alfalfa up yesterday. But, like, I mean, throughout the movie, all they do is just kind of chase him. And then by the time they actually get to an actual fight, they're the ones that, like, Butch is the one who gets punched. And so it's like, do they ever beat them up, actually? Like, it really does make you, I don't know, man.
Well, here's what I have gathered. Alfalfa feels bad for them. So he lets them beat them up under normal circumstances. It just so happens that he doesn't like getting beat up, so he will run from them. And maybe they'll take some punches, right? But, you know, but he's just not taking their shit today. He's just like, no, not today. Not today, guys. Punches Butch out, scares Woim enough that he jumps in after him. Like, he's a pity. They're pity bullies. Like, well, gee, fellas, I know that you could be in our gang, but I guess you just ain't good enough. So I guess, you know, if you feel you gotta take your aggression down on me, that's fine. Because that's exactly how 8-year-olds talk. Gosh. Oh, Waddle said that she has the sophistication of a 12-year-old. That is, she's 5.
Having a full on romantic date. Like, I know we technically see Spanky and Alfalfa's dads for like a second to be like, hey, nope, they're not home. But in general, where are these goddamn parents? Like, who was letting Darla go on their 5-year-old daughter go on dates alone with this random older kid? Like, what? What are we? What are are we doing? I can't. It's a lot. Oh, yeah. And obviously, we also have Buckwheat's mom, who is Whoopi Goldberg.
We'll hold off on the cameos.
Yeah. I mentioned that we're the parents. And, like, yes, there is a parent. Another yeah. one, but still.
Whoopi Goldberg is busy. Like, I can see her not having time for Buckwheat. She's got a lot of stuff going on. Like, she's pretending to be a nun. She owns a basketball franchise. She lives in the future giving advice to Jean-Luc Picard.
Yeah. And, you know, she's busy taking orders from evil lions pretty soon, so.
Oh, yeah. And she has to be a cartoon.
Oh, it's speaking of things that are inappropriate for these children, they had at least two boner jokes related to Alfalfa's cowlix.
Ah, yeah.
Stop making boner jokes about an 8-year-old child. Can we stop it? Can we stop? I don't like it. Ugh. This movie is not good.
No, this movie's bad. It's bad. What was your opinion about the giant amount of misogyny coming from the He-Man Women's Hair Club?
It's awful. But it's like not just the fact that they're ridiculously misogynistic. It's also like the way they're portrayed, because they also like reinforce this shit with how they show the girls who are in their like pink bedroom being as girly as they can be, and then at the end the girls are only worthwhile because like they're only worth considering if they have any interest in boy stuff, and they're like, oh, if you're like down to clown, then you're good enough to be like one of our girlfriends. Like, it's not just that the He-Man woman haters are weird misogynists, but like their like lesson that they try to teach about boys and girls just getting along is so dated in itself that it's still just annoying as fuck.
The thing that kind of stuck with me was that I was watching it and I wish I could say that they were being overblown with the misogyny from the boys, but I know from my own history, they are not. I remember when I was a young boy on the playground, there was a severe hatred towards girls, and I cannot explain where it came from. I did not have hatred for the girls. I just wanted to fit in with the rest of the boys. It was a mob mentality situation. Mm-hmm. I got swept up in it. And man, I remember at my elementary school before I transferred to our dad's school, there's this cool kind of flying saucer looking equipment, and every day on the playground, a huge amount of boys would take it over as soon as as recess started, and not only would they not allow girls in it, every day. They would climb on the side of it and then chant, "No girls allowed, stomp. No girls allowed, stomp." It was like, looking back on it, it's horrific. Like, why? Why did we hate girls so much? Why did we just insist on not only keeping them from something, but to loudly proclaim repeatedly every day how much we enjoyed keeping it from them?
You know, it's interesting because when I was little, like, first and second grade, like, my big friend group was like, I was in a trio with a girl and a boy, and so like I feel like I didn't have a big us versus them mentality, because it's like my little friend group included a boy, and I don't know. And then, I mean, there was the Spice Girl friendship phase. So I guess that was pretty boyless. But then again, when I got older, I wanted to play soccer with the boys on the playground. And I used to do that. And I used to take pride in the fact that the other girls were afraid to play with the boys. But, like, they always let me. Like, there wasn't, like, a, you know, one side red. Like,
I don't know. Anyway, watching this movie made me sad on various levels.
Yeah. I mean, at least now, like, because there was, like, a lot of things about this thing. Just like, God, what are your parents teaching you? When Alfalfa and Spanky are, you know, dressed in their tutus and they're dressed like girls and they go past Woim and what's his toes? What is his name? Butch. Butch and Woim. And, like, Butch is like, you got some fries with that shake? And, like, all this kind of shit where, like, he has, like, no business knowing. And it's just like, what is your father saying in front of you? Jeez. Oh, like, what are your parents doing in your presence that you think it's okay to talk like this?
Oh, God. There's only one thing away from this little kid saying to this other little kid, hey, that tutu would look really good crumpled up on the floor of my bedroom.
I mean, it's really like 2 seconds away from that. It's very weird.
Is there anything else we need to talk about the movie itself before we talk about characters? Because I think I'm out.
The other thing is the weird mix of eras. So you have this story that, like, judging from the cars and all the stuff, it feels very contemporary. Yet you have these kids who are dressed like 1930s street urchins, half of them. They have, not all the kids, though. Like, some of the kids have these weird old-timey outfits. And there's, like, you don't know why. Like, it's weird. Like, you have, like, characters like Stymie, who look like they're pulled, like, right out of that era. And a couple of other kids as well. And then you have other kids who are wearing relatively, like, contemporary-looking clothes. And then you're definitely in an area that is definitely supposed to be contemporary. And, like, it's just, like, confusing. And like, why?
You know, I was actually mostly okay with that because it just made me think that some of the characters are just eccentric. Like, I like that Stymie had that hat. I thought I enjoyed that he... I could totally see a little kid being obsessed with certain clothes and only allow themselves to be dressed in that sort of thing unless he starts throwing a fit. And eventually his parents are just like, okay, yeah, whatever. Now, Stymie is very mature, so I don't really see that exact situation. It just seems like he's like, I like bowler hats. They can look good.
I mean, maybe, but like, it's not like it's only Stymie, because it's like,
yeah, no. Alfalfa multiple
kids. Yeah, and it's just like, it feels like to me a bit of like, pick a lane. Either you're doing this oldie, or you're not, because this back and forth feels weird to me. That's
the real answer is just that there are certain characters who have more visual iconic looks than other characters. Like Alfalfa is known for wearing bow ties and stuff like that. Stymie is well known for being a bald black kid always wearing a bowler hat. So I'm assuming that they decided to keep the looks of characters who had those iconic looks, and then maybe characters who didn't have such iconic looks, they didn't bother. Like, I don't know if Spanky had anything particularly old-timey about his look, so it's probably an implication that he didn't really have anything too memorable about his style back then. But, I mean, like, I don't know, Buckwheat's kind of interesting because Buckwheat is known for having, like, these big, giant naps in his hair, and that would be weird to try to do in the 90s, especially since Hollywood still struggled with black hair. So just simplified it, put them in braids.
Yeah, we have to acknowledge all the times that you called me Buckwheat as a child. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I might have.
Oh yeah, you did. Because I always wore braids. Honestly, my hair looks very similar to what my hair looked like in, like, a lot of, like, say, first and second grade, only now they're technically twists instead of braids, but it hadn't changed that much. And I remember, like, when you were older and you started wearing braids, I was like, oh, you hypocrite motherfucker. All the times that you called me Buckwheat for my braids, and now look who thinks braids are cool. Like,
I'll just say, I was a young kid with a younger sibling. What do you expect from me?
I know.
You know, you expect me to apologize? I'm not going to apologize for the actions of my childhood self.
All the nights I cried myself to sleep.
If you won't be mad at someone, get mad at the guy from Seven Dust. I never would have gotten braids if it wasn't for him. All right, let's move on to characters just for the sake of time. Yes. We are a little limited today.
Yes.
Right, there's not really a ton of stuff I want to talk about the characters, since so many of their characters is a little kid. And we've kind of already talked about the most important stuff about, say, Darla, and that we're creeped out by some of the stuff that she says.
Yeah.
But there are a couple key folks I do want to...
Also, wait, can I say the amount of time, her and the kissing, that's another thing. She kisses Alfalfa a lot. And she literally loses her, like, womanness as she kind of weaponizes it and, like, seems to have already, like, gotten this idea to barter her kisses and things like that, to the point where I was like, considering she's 5, has she been sexually abused? And now she is, like, literally, like, usually when kids that young have such a, like, developed idea about themselves sexually, and it comes from abuse. This movie just makes me feel like very uncomfortable.
Now I have to assume that nobody was thinking about that during the production of this film.
I know, but it just reads real bad. It makes me feel so uncomfortable.
You know what? They keep trying to take cool things from the past and turn them into horror films. Like the Banana Splits was turned into a horror film lately. How about someone turn The Little Rascals into a horror film?
Oh, boy.
Like a thriller. Like a dark thriller.
He-Man woman haters just showing up killing women?
No, just like the dark side of The Little Rascals in this implore, like a cycle of abuse and parental neglect that led to the formation of street gangs.
You know, I'm just imagining. I could just hear it, like you hearing, like, you know, like maybe like distant steps, or maybe like the sound of like a pipe on a fence or something, and you hear in the distance, "I got a dollar." The person in screen, they're like breathing heavily, like looking around. They're so scared. "I got a dollar. Oh my god, where is it coming from?" And then there's like little rascals, and it's like, oh, it's terrifying.
Actually, before we get more into the characters, thank you for bringing up that song, because I did want to mention it, because that was a song that, like we said, we sang a lot. But when I saw it in this movie, it was terrible. It wasn't even sung on the beat. It wasn't even both of them singing. It was just Buckwheat, and then like the kid playing Porky was just clearly like just off of his own. Like he was like off script. Just dancing. And the music was not as memorable as my memory suggests. And I was horribly disappointed. I feel like I wasted my youth on that song.
Yeah, we really pumped it up. Like we really improved that little song.
Okay, back to the characters. We have to mention the two main, well, I was even gonna say three main kids, I guess, for the club, and that's, you know, Travis Tedford as Spanky, Bug Hall, that is his Hollywood name, as Alfalfa, and then like Kevin Jamal Woods as Stymie. Don't know anything about Kevin Jamal Woods. He doesn't really seem to have much of a Wikipedia presence. Bug Hall acted for a while afterwards. I think I don't know how much work he gets, but he's technically still active. I guess yes, he gets a pretty good amount of work. He's been appearing in at least one project every year for the last few years.
He's successful enough to have an adult picture on IMDb. So a lot of the kids in this cast, like their IMDb pictures are still like their Little Rascals headshot.
Interesting. Travis Tedford was already kind of famous before this film, I believe, because he was the Well, maybe that was the same year, just earlier in the year. But he was the Welch's Grape Juice kid in 94.
I remember those commercials.
He was around for a little bit, a little while. But he's apparently no longer active as of 2010. So he's been out of the game for 12 years or so. Like I said, I think Alfalfa's performance is one of the better ones. But it's because Bug Hall was significantly older than most of the other casts. So yeah. That'd be why. Waldo, same situation. He's played by Blake McIver-Ewing. He is also somebody who has been active. He was on Full House as well. Yeah. As a reoccurring character.
I feel like he must have been, like, I feel like his like, young career must have been a lot of, we want a Macaulay Culkin type, but we don't got Macaulay Culkin money. Like, I feel like he was, like, the second kid you went to cast if you couldn't afford or get Macaulay Culkin.
Yeah, because the first thing I thought when I saw that guy, I was like, is Macaulay Culkin in this movie?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I really do think it was, like, his early career was just, like, picking them scraps.
He's not near, doesn't seem to be as active as Bug Hall, but still out there doing stuff. I want to point out a couple of characters specifically for, oh, actually, before we move on from Waldo, I wanted to point out that Waldo got done a little dirty in this film, because Waldo wasn't an antagonist in the original shorts, from what I can tell. He was one of the gang. Like, he was one of their friends, but, and he was the rich kid, but his gimmick wasn't even that he's the rich snotty kid. It was more like he's like this emotionless, like, logic-based kid who kind of found himself a little at odds with the rest of the crew because they're, you know, emotional and less mature than he was. There was a different character who was the snobby rich kid that they hated. I don't know why they decided to just change Waldo instead of having the other kid, but there you go. It's a weird.
It's a weird choice. Little showman, that kid doing the doing love at the talent show. Which I think also, like, really shows how young Darla is, because, like, he's singing the whole thing and she's just kind of there, like, doing, like, a little couple steps sometimes, doesn't really know where she is. You can really tell she's five. Also, it does also feel like Waldo is just, like, a gay kid who has come into town and he gets along better with a girl and he kind of hates Alfalfa. Maybe he's attracted to him. He doesn't know it yet. Who knows?
Mm. All right, I want to call out a couple of actors here from the cast. So Froggy, who is the frog-voiced kid.
He worked a lot, didn't he?
I don't see... He doesn't have a Wikipedia page, so I don't have that information from him. He's played by Jordan Warkel, but voiced by E.G. Daily, who we would best know as the voice of Tommy Pickles from Rugrats, and the voice of Buttercup from the Powerpuff Girls.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's going on with the kid who's playing the physical role, but E.G. Daily is a very famous and long-tenured voice actor in the business. Ross Bagley plays Buckwheat, and the only reason I'm bringing Ross Bagley up is that Ross Bagley was also in The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Mm-hmm.
He was the Nicky, who... because of TV trickery, was introduced at some point in one of the later seasons of the show. Although, the episode he shows up in is also my favorite season premiere in the history of cliffhanger season finales.
Yeah.
As the season finale, the previous season of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air was that Will had gone to visit Philly and realized that things had changed, things are safer, and he realized how comfortable he was there. And at the end of the episode, they're like, so when are you coming back home to Bel-Air? He's like, I'm not. And that's when the season ends. And the season premiere, and you're just wondering, like, how they're going to get him back. And the season premiere is that an executive from NBC comes to the restaurant where Will's working in and says, hey, this is not the Fresh Prince of Philadelphia. It's the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. And then they kidnap him. They throw him in the back of their NBC truck. It's like, and you can hear the very white executive say, yo, Holmes, to Bel-Air. And then it just goes back to Bel-Air without any rhyme or reason. I remember thinking, like, that is the most disappointing and amazing thing I've ever seen in television. And the reason that Cousin Nicky is there is, like, he breaks the fourth wall by asking who's playing the mom this year. And then Cousin Nicky, who last time we saw him was, like,
a baby. Yeah.
Like, shows up as Ross Bagley and is like, it's the same one.
Really ridiculous.
I think it's probably by this point of the show that, like, people had, the writers might have checked out and are just kind of being silly at this point. All right, one more, and that is Cortland Meek, who plays Uh-Huh, and I know him the most as, and this is the second time I brought this up, but I know him the most as a character from one of my favorite cartoon shows, Recess.
Yeah.
As he played Gus, the army brat who is kind of the point of view character for the initial couple episodes of Recess, as his transferring to a new school is how we get to meet all the different characters and things. His questions are the same questions that we have. Like, why are these people digging? Why does that guy have a crown? And yeah, it's very funny.
Not so interesting in this movie, but no. You know, he gets old, grows up a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
And by the time we get to Recess, I think he's a perfectly good voice actor.
Yeah. So he plays Aha, and Aha's main thing is that he basically never says anything other than Aha, except at the very end of the movie where he recites a very complicated and long-worded speech, suggesting that he only chose to say Aha, but his vocabulary is much larger than that. And as he was talking, I remember thinking, like, God, this voice sounds so familiar, but like rougher, but like less together.
Also,
and then, no, it's Gus. That's why.
And also, like, as he's speaking, it is so clear that he is being fed these lines and he can barely get it out, that it completely negates the speech. Like,
it totally does.
It's like, clearly he can't say these words. He can barely say these words. It was stupid.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Those are the only main characters I wanted to throw in. I did want to talk about some cameos.
Oh, man. If that's okay with boy. You.
All right. Yeah, well, first of all, let's just get out of the way. Donald Trump is in this film because this was an era of movies where Donald Trump cameoed in a lot of things all the time. This is before people started understanding what a gigantic... I see people, I mean, like, the general population didn't necessarily understand what a gigantic asshole slash monster he is. People didn't really seem to start noticing that until he had his own TV show years later. And then even then, he still became president somehow.
And he's still working at it. People are still...
at the time, people were just like, oh, it's that very famous rich guy. Yeah. What's he even rich for? I don't know. I think rich people are great. I want to be rich one day. Let's put him in movies. I don't know. He just showed up a lot in things. This is one of the only times that he plays a character, as he plays Waddle's father, Waddle Johnson II. Normally, he just plays Donald Trump. Now, he's probably just playing Donald Trump. And there's a blooper of him spitting at somebody. Did you see that?
Oh, was he spitting? I thought he was just trying to get at that popcorn.
Pretty sure he spit.
Ugh, gross. I don't know. Also, his eyebrows were weird.
Ugh, no, he's... I don't care for Donald Trump, and I don't care who knows
him. Hot take. We don't like Donald Trump.
I also don't like Candace Owens. But that's neither here nor there. Whoopi Goldberg, we mentioned, really just in one shot. And I guess the joke is Buckwheat has braids or dreads or whatever. And so does Whoopi Goldberg. Isn't that funny? Also, it's like, hey, it's my mom. Oh, Whoopi. It's like, oh, it's Whoopi Goldberg. Isn't that funny? Ha cha 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 cha.
She does seem like a very supportive mom. She even knows the little, like, under... They have, like, a little, like, signal that they do in their club where they, like, you know, wiggle their fingers under their chin. And she does that little motion to him. And it's like, oh, you seemed invested in your child's things.
Invested enough to know that he's doing this stuff unsupervised. But not invested enough to stop him.
Yeah, not invested enough to, like, actually, like, watch your five-year-old. But at least you know what he likes.
Reba McEntire is in this. I don't know if this is before or after Reba McEntire really made the big acting jump, because I know she's famous for being a country musician, right? But like,
oh, yeah.
At some point, she becomes like just full-on, I'm an actor, even having her own sitcom for a number of years down the line.
She's a single mom who works too hard, who loves her kids, and never stops. She's a survivor.
Yeah. Yeah, that is... That is how the theme song went.
Wasn't she in the end of Beverly Hillbillies as well? And I'm remembering that right?
Oh, yeah. Wait, no. That was Dolly Parton.
No, that was for the birthday. Dolly Parton sang happy birthday to him. But, like, wasn't she at, like, a...
No, I don't remember. I guess we need to watch that movie. But perhaps, much like Leah Thompson, maybe she's just one of Penelope's... Sephiroth's go-tos.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll have to watch that movie, which we already had to watch. Mel Brooks is in this movie for some reason.
Yeah. I mean, it's fun. And also, I remember as a kid really liking that exchange with Mel Brooks and Stymie. Mel Brooks is like, if you were my kids, I'd punish you. And Stymie is like, if we were your kids, we'd punish ourselves. And I remember thinking that was very funny.
Yeah, I remember thinking that was funny at the time, a laugh out loud in theater moment. But watching that now,
it's not.
I remember thinking like, this. I was like, not only is this not funny, it actually doesn't make any sense.
And he also has like the line, you're not people, you're kids, which I feel like was very pointed. Like, I can just like imagine the writers being like, and that's the crux, isn't it? That no one thinks they're people because they're kids. But like, they don't really. It just seemed to stick out a lot, that line.
You mentioned Leah Thompson, who's in this.
She's the ballet teacher.
I was super young in the 80s, so I'm not sure if it counts to have an 80s crush, but she was the closest thing I had to an 80s crush.
Mm, that's fair.
All right, very quickly, Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen show up in this, which is kind of funny, because I had forgotten just how around they were at the time. They were kind of everywhere.
And it's such an awful moment, because like, Darla is like having a sleepover with her friends, and you don't see that they're there until they both turn over their shoulders and it's like, and they say something in unison to make you go, oh wow, it's the Olsen twins. And it's such a horrible moment. I hated it.
Now Raven Simone also cameos in this. She shows up at the very end of the film as one of the girls who joins the club, although she seems to be a girl that Stymie is talking about.
No, she is credited as Stymie's girlfriend.
Yeah, that's weird.
Because, like, they basically, like, here's a famous black girl to go along with him.
Yeah. Raven Simone is the most, in my opinion, the most successful child actress in this, which is kind of funny considering that she's only in it for, like, 3 seconds.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you can say Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen are the most successful because they became super rich and then just kind of pieced out from Hollywood, as one should.
Yeah.
But I don't know, Raven Simone has been working all this time, still stars and stuff.
Yeah, the most successful still acting actor. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the Olsen twins have both retired, where they've left the acting to their much more talented younger sister.
Yeah.
Who actually went to school for acting. So.
Yeah. Oh, another, Daryl Hannah is here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, she's Miss Crabtree, which isn't that a character from Recess? Like, named Miss Crabtree?
You're right, because I kept thinking like, this sounds familiar, but then I was like, maybe I'm just thinking about Miss Krabappel. But no, I think you're right. I think Crabtree must be Recess.
Let's see. No, it is South Park.
Oh, okay.
I think it's the bus driver.
That makes sense, because you have like, I'm sure they purposely made a little. Rascals reference with that. That sounds like something they would do.
Okay. And then also George Wendt, who is most famous as Norm from Cheers, a show I've never seen like a full episode of, I do not believe.
Me too.
But
I did, when I saw him, I went, Norm.
Okay. Any other characters you want to touch on? Because there's barely any characters in this. Everyone's character is that they are a precocious little child who talks like an adult.
Oh, and just to clarify that Reba McEntire's character, she's like the race driver who is like presenting at the go-kart race. And like yet another example of a woman only seeing like kind of worthwhile as a human if she is doing something that the boys thinks is a boy thing. And it's like, oh, well, it turns out you're AJ Ferguson. Well, dang.
I feel like what that teaches me is that racing isn't a boy thing. It is an everybody thing.
Okay. That's,
maybe that should be the lesson.
That is a better lesson, yes. Also, this is neither here nor there, but just speaking of the races, a good way to hide a kid's bad acting, put them in race helmets. Makes it a lot easier to edit.
Yep, that's true. One thing I just wanted to throw out there. If there's one thing, if you wanted to try to get me invested in your story with little kids having adventures, soapbox derbies is something that I've always been into, because I've always wanted to When I was a kid, I always wanted to be in a soapbox derby. Now, this isn't a soapbox derby. These are apparently real cars for some reason. I'm not sure where they got these cars, nor do I know why the blur is so good looking.
Yeah, like, does someone buy it for them? Because like, these kids did not make that thing. They're four. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. It's
well,
weird.
I mean, they did make the blur too in like a day, and it's a fully functional car that seems to be just as good as the first one.
Yeah, using
it's just a rush job.
Using the power of a washing machine, they're virtuosos. Like that's the thing. I guess we're not acknowledging the fact that they're apparently fucking geniuses and engineering dynamos, these kids. So I guess that's exciting.
All right, Ariel, do I even need to ask this question? I feel like we've made our point clear, but what would you give the Little Rascals? Would you give it a thumbs up, a thumbs down, or a thumb somewhere in the middle?
A flying thumbs up. Real great stuff. Really loved it. You know, in the end, it's all about heart and friendship. So, you know, actually pretty, I take all this other stuff I said back, because like in the end, it's just about the friendship between Spanky and Alfalfa. It brings a tear to your eye, but like a southern tear.
A Texas tear.
It brings a Texas tear to your eye.
That's where Spanky is. So Spanky is from Texas.
He's so sad.
Well, Travis Tedford is from Texas.
I did have like multiple times, like, do I think Spanky is really precocious, or is it just that he has a southern accent? I can't tell what I'm responding to.
I was asking, is Spanky giving a decent performance, or is it just because he's from Texas and he's got a Texas accent?
100%. For some reason, I always feel like that brand of southern accent, like I guess like the Texas kind of accent, always makes the person sound older to me. Like however old you are, for some reason, like that accent makes me feel like you're older. And I feel like it was a bit of that with, like, yeah, it's like, I don't know if your acting is good or if I'm just enjoying your Texas accent. But no, I don't like this. Thumbs down. Sorry.
It's a
thumbs down for me, dog.
Okay. All right. Thumbs down for me as well. This movie could have been fine. All they had to do was hire older kids completely down the line. The fact that they made the terrible decision to cast a wide net on children's ages really hurts this film. There's too many little kids who are trying to be forced to say things that they can't do. If this was them trying to recreate something from The Little Rascals, they made a horrible mistake that sometimes people make when they're trying to adapt something. Sometimes when you're adapting something, what works in the original version can't work in whatever you're doing now, whether that be because it's a different medium or because it's a different time or we know more about child labor laws. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But they needed to have – everyone needed to be around the same age as Bug Hall and Blake MacIver Ewing. Like they needed to be like kind of that 8 years old range at the youngest. Eight, nine at the youngest.
Throw in some 11-year-olds. Yeah, I don't know why we have to make people like this young.
I mean, if we make them too old, then they're not the Little Rascals
anymore.
Well,
I know, but like, there's plenty of like movies that we've seen where like the kids are around like 11-year-olds, but they're also like kind of small and they're very good at playing younger without actually being younger. Like, I think that definitely should have been the goal. You should have had some older kids that were relatively small and gone that route.
Yeah. So this movie, I don't know if I'd say it had a sequel, but it did have, but there wasn't a second Little Rascals movie that came out later in 2014 called The Little Rascals Save the Day. I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to watch it, but looking at the poster, it makes me feel completely neutral. There's nothing on here that makes me be like, oh, this looks good or worse or whatever. It's just, oh, it's just different kids dressed like that. Although Buckwheat appears to have a fro as opposed to having braids. So, I don't know. Anyway, if you want us to watch that movie, you're going to have to... you know what? Apparently this movie is also referred to as Little Rascals 2, so... Oh no, it says Rascal's Beginning. It's a prequel.
What are, is this like a Baby Geniuses situation? Like, how could you have a prequel to this story? They're already the youngest things ever.
I don't know. Like, we'd have to watch it to find out exactly what that means.
If you want us to watch it, then we will not do it until we have a Patreon and you pay us a bunch of money to do so.
Next time, we are going to be returning to the world of television, and not just a special. We're actually be looking at a TV show. This was, I gave Ariel an opportunity to pick something because I feel like I've been kind of bogarting the decision making lately, and Ariel picked something that I deeply regret that she picked. But next week, we are going to do the TV show Sister, Sister.
Sister, Sister.
The main thing I remember about Sister, Sister is that it changed networks at some point. It's the only thing I really remember. I mean, I remember details about the plot, but and also the kid who plays their guy friend, Roger. I think he grew up to be a scumbag.
Probably. But as a kid who did not like Full House, I was not a Full House kid.
You're a little young.
Yeah. It didn't hit. I remember like seeing it, but like it wasn't my show. And I do remember being a youth and being excited that like we had some black girl twins. Like, it's like we have a set of twins too. Like, yeah. And because you know Tia Tamara also had like multiple movies themselves, and I remember kind of being excited for that.
But yeah, with Tia and Tamara Mowry, who their big sitcom. This is why they're still famous today because of how popular the show was. So we're going to check out the first season, which is only 12 episodes. So it's a good time to check that out. I'm kind of interested to learn more about the background of this show and especially why it went from ABC for the first two seasons and then WB for the last five seasons. Other than the obvious answer, which I don't like, and that ABC doesn't want black people on their network and WB just took all the black shows at the time. Hope that's not it. But I guess we'll find out. But yeah, if you would like to reach out to us again, the email is adultsiblingsversus@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at adultversus on Twitter, and our Facebook is under adultsiblingsversus. Our theme song is Sell Out by Zion Apocalypse Now from the EP Forbidden Tales of Science. You can find that and more on the website antizombierock.bandcamp.com. So Ariel, before we go, I did want to ask you, if you had a precocious club when you were this age you were when this movie came out, so like what, six or so, what would you call it? Would, if not the He-Man Woman Hairs Club?
I would probably say it's probably the She-Ra I'm Better Than Annie Club, because as we all know, I was still in my feud with that damn orphan at this point.
Yeah, I would have called my club the Stonemasons. In any case, we're going to live vicariously through our children's selves by starting our own secret society against Annie. But until next time, as always, please do not put a dirty sock in your younger sibling's mouth or call them Buffy.
Yeah. I got a dollar.
Do you say we or do you say I?
I said I, because you said I, didn't you?
I know, I said I did say I. We should have said okay. We.
Do you want to do it again?
Nope.